It up just a minute ago. You can put that image up again now, Nick. Thanks. As you know, because it was also up on Facebook, if you're part of the Facebook group, I know I need to invite some people to be part of that group. But we are really, really pleased to have our senior minister designate, which I'll let James explain what that means. But he truly is an international speaker and author. Have you ever spoken on in a different country? You've not had a conversation in a different country?
I have spoken to people.
Yeah, there we go. He's an international speaker. Did you write anything down while you were abroad? International author and speaker. Thank you. Kind of. So will you please give it up, boy, yeah, for Mr. Dr. James Collins. We need some introduction music, really, but we haven't got any. So. Hang on. Yeah. That wasn't this music, was it? Was that that music? That would have changed the whole of Generator as we know it. So, you will have opportunity to ask anything you like of James this evening. He said he'll be as honest and open as he can be, and he is an honest and open chap. So I'm going to fire a few questions, if that's all right, and then in a little while we'll open it up. But I am going to start with the one that needs to be asked, and I think everyone knows what's coming. So, Agnes, this is for you, baby. We want to really start by getting deep into who you are and what makes you tick, James. So the question is, would you rather have £1 million or no electricity?
Can't help feeling there's a trick to this question, but if you gave me the choice between those two things, I'd have £1 million.
That's the right answer. I should just say that was a question which Agnes asked, I don't know how many years ago, but anyone who comes to Generator who doesn't know the question gets asked, would you rather have £1 million or no electricity? And people think it's a trick question, but the answer is £1 million, obviously. But there's been many a spiritual person who has chosen no electricity for some bizarre reason. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about, just introducing a bit about who you are, okay, and let's go into how you became a Christian. That would be good.
Okay. Well, you're probably aware I'm married, so I'm married to Naomi, and we have two kids, Katie and Mikey. Katie is 12 and Mikey is 10. Some of you no doubt will have talked to Katie, or I say talk to Katie, been talked at by Katie, probably is a more accurate description. She is a good talker. And Mikey is the opposite. He's very quiet, so you can have a bit of difficulty getting a conversation going with Mikey, but he's got plenty of good things to share if you get past his shyness. And so that's our family. I have a long list of things I'm interested in, so I won't bore you with all of them, but I do like reading, I like playing computer games, and I like sport of almost any. I watch almost any sport, but my favourites to watch would be probably football and cricket and rugby. What was that? I didn't hear either. Oh, okay. What sports wouldn't I watch? Bowls. You like a bit of bowls? No, I'm not interested in bowls. Sorry? Petanque is the French name for it, but with petanque, don't they throw them up in the air a little
it's
bit?
It's a slightly different game, actually.
Yeah, whereas bowls is all along the floor. I wouldn't watch... I'm not dead keen on the Olympics. I don't really... outside of athletics, I watch athletics, but, you know, they've come out with some really dodgy sports, I think, in that. But on the whole, most team sports I watch, most individual sports I watch. How do I become? What else would you like to know about me? I'm 45 years old. The scary thing is, I remember what it was like to be your sort of age, like it was yesterday, and it's horrible. You don't believe me, but you'll be my age one day, and then you'll think, how did that happen? But it will.
I've got a long way to go, so it's all right.
Not that far. What else can I tell you? I support Watford. That's important information. Why do I support Watford? Because I was brought up in Watford. Yeah, so it was my local team. And how do I become a Christian? Well, I was brought up in a Christian home. We used to go to church every Sunday, very high commitment Christian home. I must admit, right through my childhood and teenage years, I just thought, I was a believer and stuff, but there weren't many other people my age in any of the churches we went to. And it just felt like it wasn't something that really met the real world. So I was very interested in getting a career and doing well, and church never really seemed to connect with what was going on in my life. So I went along, but as soon as I was old enough, really, I stopped going. And I want to be a good person. So I remember thinking really, I could be a good person without going to church and getting bored. Which was probably true in some respects, or at least the church that we were attending, we were part of, very small, I wasn't getting much from it. And however, what I found was, without that influence in my life, I just started to drift away from what I knew to be right. And I got into this relationship with a girl when I was about 20, and I really treated her very badly. I didn't mean to, but just through weakness and through not being committed to behaving myself, I didn't treat her very well at all. And when it all broke up, that really was a trigger for me thinking, who am I turning into here? What sort of person am I? And I began to realise I didn't really like the person I was. And so I started going back to church and really felt again an influence that was driving me towards being a better person, and also a sense that I could be forgiven for not living as I should have done. And so it was really when I was about 21 that I came to a really serious faith, where I thought, actually, I want to be a good person, and it seems to me this is the way that God can help me to be that person. And I also want to be forgiven for the mess-ups I've made. And so that's really the story of me coming to kind of a committed faith.
How did you end up wanting to go in and become a minister and then end up here at Purley Baptist Church?
When I was just after I really came back to faith, I was really immature at school. I'm sure none of you are like this, but I've really found it very difficult to study. I was quite bright, but I just never fulfilled my potential. So I got halfway through A-levels, I can remember, and I was just flunking everything, because I couldn't discipline myself to do any work at all. So I'd left school and gone out to work, and I'd thought the academic career was not for me. But then, when I became a Christian again, I had grown up a lot in the meantime, and the opportunity presented itself for me to go to university as a mature student on the basis of the work experience I'd had rather than academic qualifications. So I started doing a degree in information management. And about halfway through that, so I'd been a Christian by this time maybe 2 years, I realised I was far more interested, although I was doing well on the course, I was far more interested in God, in trying to help people find God, in teaching people about the Bible than I was. I was doing youth work at the time, so very much a group roughly like this in the church I was in. And I was just so much more into that than I was into getting a good job after I'd finished my degree. So I finished my degree because particularly my dad said to me it would be good to get that qualification under your belt before you consider ministry. And I did 1 year teaching at a further education college, and then went off to Bible college after that to train for the ministry. My first job as a minister, going back about 15 years now, was at Gold Hill Baptist Church, which is a big Baptist church, slightly bigger even than Purley. And I was one of the team ministers there, and particularly looking after young adults, students and young adults. And I worked there for 3 years, but at the end of that three-year term, I was ready really to try and lead a church myself. I felt that was what the next step really for me was. So I went to a church not far from here in a place called Morden, and I led a church there for 5 years before moving to Red Hill. And I was at Red Hill for 8 years, and a little while ago, Peter Nodding rang me up and said, I'm moving on soon, I'm going to be retiring. Would you have any interest in the job here at Purley? And I'd been thinking it might be time to move on from Red Hill, and that's how I come ultimately to be here. If you want any more details on any of that, I've tried to keep it brief, but if you want any more details, I'm happy to give them.
And what do you think of Purley now you're here?
The church or the place?
Both.
Okay. Purley is a place. I don't really know that I've got a real feel for it yet. I think I'm not very good at geography, like remembering where things are, so all the time at the moment I have to tap the postcode into my sat nav to get anywhere at all. So I haven't really got any grasp of where everything is yet. But it seems like a really nice area. I think there are far worse places you could live. And I quite like the busyness of it. I quite like the sense that there's a lot of people around in the town and you know, different types of people. So that's all good. And I think it'll be easier for us when we actually move into Purley. At the moment, we're living in Coulston. But when Peter retires and his house, which belongs to the church, becomes available, we'll move in there. And I think then we'll be living right in Purley. So we'll get much more of a feel for the place then quite quickly, I think. The church, I like. I like the diversity. So I like the fact there's a real mixture of cultures. I think it's quite interesting. There's much less mixture of cultures here. So I don't know. Don't know why that is, but I like all of that. I think a real mixture of people is quite exciting. I like the fact the church has a really focused on trying to reach out to the local community, and obviously has the resources to do it to some extent. So that's quite exciting. And I know that the building project is a bit controversial with the local community, but I get the impression they'll come around to the idea eventually. And I think when we get those new premises, it's going to be really exciting what we can do in terms of opening the doors and getting people in, and I'm sure the church will grow again. So I think it's quite exciting times. And I really like the staff team. I'm up for a bit of a laugh. So we've been, Matt, you all know Matt?
Yeah.
So he's getting married next year. And so Sam and I have decided we're going to get him into shape for his marriage. So we found out last week that Matt, well, up until about a week ago, he couldn't do a press up, not even one. So Matt, Sam and I didn't think this was acceptable for a man who was preparing to be married. And so we got him starting doing press-ups. He did 15 a couple of days ago, 15 press-ups from nothing. So we're getting Matt into shape, and that we're having a real, real good laugh in the office with that. And I told Mark today, he's missing out by being over here. We need to get him over into the church offices because we're having a lot of fun. There's some really good people here at the church, in the leadership team, on the staff team. I've really enjoyed getting to know them, and I think there's potential for a lot of fun, even as we seriously try and serve God together.
I think the new building probably needs a gym, doesn't it? Gym. Why don't you demonstrate some of your press-ups for us? Would you like to see that? Get your cameras out, people.
How many press-ups would be an acceptable number for 45?
50's a pass.
For a 45-year-old man? 25. 25. 25.
1, 2. Just having a pause, yeah, 12. Don't put your back out, James. Oh.
That's
He slowed down. Oh, well done. Well done. That was good. My turn. Oh, if you'd have said I'd done it at the same time. You don't want to see me do it, do you?
You need some time to prepare.
I get thinking of questions. There's going to become something in a minute. Whew. So, what is your favourite verse in the Bible?
I've got lots of verses I like, but probably 1 John chapter 3, verse 1. Who knows what that is?
Who can look it up quickly on their device?
Or you could go old school.
You could go old school. Let's see if it's the device or the old school method that comes up first. That's exciting. 1 John, chapter 3, verse 1.
Sometimes that's really sad, isn't it? But in the really old-fashioned Bible, it says, "Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God." So it's like an expression of surprise that God could love so much that we could be His dearly loved children. And I suppose I always loved that verse when I was a kid, because I used to think to myself, obviously, then as a child. Oh, sorry. I always loved that verse as a kid because I like the idea that I was a child at the time and that God was my father. Now I really love it because having kids of my own, I know how much I love them, and like any parent would love their child. And the thought that God loves me like that is very, very important to me. So I think that's probably my favourite verse in the Bible.
This is just a little side. I had a little moment with Joel the other day. So I'm walking him to school, and since becoming a dad, I've begun to understand what God as Father is really like. I suppose that must be the case. But you know, I'm walking with Joel, and I just look at him, and he looks at me, then he looks away, but I carried on looking at him, and then he looks at me again, and he's like, "Why are you looking at me?" And I said, "Why do you think?" And he says, "Because you love me, isn't it?" And I went, "Yes." And as soon as that conversation finished, I suddenly, honestly, I thought, is that how God looks at me? Is God looking at me always and thinking, I love him? And I think he does, doesn't he? And I felt it was like God reminding me that he's my father as well, and he's your father as well, and he looks at you and loves you in that way. Anyway, that's that. What would you say is the hardest thing about being a Christian for you?
I think the thing that's hard is really that the culture around us says people really generally tend to believe that it's all right to believe whatever you like, and if you want to be a Christian, that's fine, but don't, you know, if someone else doesn't want to be a Christian, then that's as true for them as Christianity is for you, kind of thing. You must be familiar with that kind of attitude. That must be very typical, I guess, amongst your friends. In your school, and obviously as Christians, what we'd say is, no, look, we think we've really got something here, and we don't want to be arrogant about it, and I'm sure lots of other people have got lots of other good insights, but we really think that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the way to live. He's the way to heaven. He is the best about everything that could ever be about a human being, and we think every human being should follow him. And it's not that I doubt that. I think that's true. And I think it is a bit crazy to just say, whatever's true for you is true for you, and whatever's true for me is true for me, because that can't be true. Things can either only be true or not. And I think that, but nevertheless, I think it's hard, because people interpret what we believe and reject us because they think we're being intolerant. Incidentally, when I grew up, if you told them what you believed, they wouldn't say you're intolerant. That wouldn't be the response you'd get. The response you would get is that you're stupid. This is stupid. Nobody really believes this stuff anymore. Nobody believes in miracles and things like that. But the world has changed. But what hasn't changed is Christianity is more usually rejected than accepted. It's just that the reasons people give for it are slightly different. But I just feel what we've got to do is do our best to make sure our lives are such that when we make the claim that Jesus makes a difference, it's evident to everyone that that's true.
A few quick fire questions for you here. What is the best Christian book you've ever read, not including the Bible? What is the best non-Christian book you've ever read? And what is the greatest film that you have ever seen?
Best film, I think my favourite film is a film called Mississippi's Burning. I'm not sure what the age certificate is on it, so you'll have to check that. Some of you may not be able to watch it yet, I don't know. But it's a film about this black guy that gets murdered in America, back when there's lots of racism in the southern states in America. And it's about these two policemen, FBI agents, who turn up to try and investigate the murder. And they're just getting nowhere because nobody will give them any information. It doesn't sound that exciting, but it's a very, very good film. I really like it. My favourite book, I'm talking about a novel or whatever, would be The Lord of the Rings. I read that when I was about 11 and absolutely loved it and still would enjoy reading it now. Best Christian book I've read? I've read quite a lot of Christian books. I might need a bit of time to think about that.
Okay, what was the last one you read?
I am currently reading a very long book about the Apostle Paul. I can't remember the one I was reading before that, sorry. Not off the top of my head. Senior moment.
That's absolutely fine. What's your favourite worship song?
Ooh. Does it have to be relatively modern, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't ever...
I actually really like two of those that we sung now. Like the first one we sung, Everyone Needs Compassion. Really like that. I just like those first few words. Everyone needs compassion, the kindness of a saviour. That's definitely true. So I like that one. And actually like the last one we sung as well. Those would be two of my favourites that are going around at the moment. I'm not really very good at having... I would have said I was quite good at having favourites, but I'm struggling.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's a good question. Mm-hmm.
Well, does anyone out there want to ask James anything? And you can make it hard, and you know, you can talk about sect denominationalism and
whatever you want.
Your hand was up first, Maddie, so perhaps do you want to run down with the mic for me, Alex?
How did you meet Naomi?
I was the chat up line. There was no chat up line. Naomi, I used to do this thing when I was at Bible college where I'd go on. There are these Christian skiing holidays you can go on, and this typically they're run by an organisation called Oak Hall. Has anyone ever been on an Oak Hall holiday? Yeah, one or two of you have. The organisation I was associated with was an offshoot of that, really, called Gold Hill Holidays. And the gig was that I would be the speaker for the week and do all the sermons in the evening, because there'd be like an evening meeting, it's a Christian holiday thing. And for that, I'd get a very heavily reduced skiing holiday. So it's quite a good deal. So this was probably the third or fourth time I'd gone. And I was a speaker. And Naomi was on that holiday. And very typically of Naomi, she was late. She's a doctor, and she was supposed to be there on the coach by about 6 o'clock I can't remember the exact time, and she was like an hour late. Everyone is sitting on this coach waiting for her to turn up. And she drove down the motorway just very fast, got there, and she came onto the coach late, very embarrassed, because everyone was already sitting on the coach waiting to go. And immediately I thought, oh, she looks nice. And I felt for her, because I could see she was very embarrassed, so I just thought I was in charge of that coach. So I just went up and said to her, don't worry about it. I tried to, you know, put her at her ease.
Would you have said that if it wasn't a pretty young lady?
I'd like to think I would, but it's impossible to know, isn't it, really? Because it didn't happen with anyone else. I don't know if I spoke to her in between times, but my next recollection is seeing her a couple of days later at a cafe down on the as we were coming down the slopes, and really just talking to her a little bit and thinking, I really like this girl. And I took every opportunity I could to sort of hang around with her throughout the course of the rest of the week. And I really wanted to ask her out, but I equally didn't want to embarrass her, because I thought, if she isn't interested, and then she's got to keep on coming to these talks that I'm giving, it's a bit awkward for her. So came up with a cunning plan, and that was, I'd ask her out on the last day. Because by that time, I'd have completed all my talks. She wouldn't have to come and listen to me speak if she'd become embarrassed. And equally, if she was a bit embarrassed, it was only the next day we'd be going home. So on the last day, I tried to manoeuvre an opportunity to ask her if I could come and see her when we got home to England. And I vividly remember it because I was trying to position myself next to her on a chairlift. If you've been skiing, you get these chairlifts where you sit when you got to the bottom of the slope to take you back up. And I was trying to get myself sitting next to her on the chairlift so I could ask her out. And unfortunately, just as we got there, she was a bit of a better skier than me. And just as we pulled up to the chairlift, a space opened up in front and she just skied straight into it. And I couldn't. So I go up on this chairlift and I'm cursing that get to the top. But she'd waited for me. And she was still on her own at that point. Her friend was on the chairlift. So I thought, now's my chance. And I said to her, Naomi, I've really enjoyed getting to know you this week, and I was wondering if it might be possible for me to come and visit you when we got back. So that was a line, if there was a line.
Paying attention, lads. That's the line.
Just, you know, just be nice, honest, and sincere. That would be my advice to you. And she said, yeah, and that's really went from there.
So you didn't say, I've been reading the Book of Numbers and noticed yours isn't in there. What? Although that's quite good. I've been reading the yellow pages.
That was how it started. She was living in Cambridge at the time, near Cambridge, and I was down in London studying, and we commuted a bit, and about a year later we got engaged.
What's the most embarrassing thing you've ever done?
There may be something more embarrassing than this, but the thing that springs to mind was going back to when I was a teenager. Back then, skinny jeans were fashionable, right? So it just takes time for it to all come back round. And I remember going into this shop with my parents when I was probably about 13. So I was still at an age where I was shopping with my parents, but I was just starting to get very self-conscious about being like not uncool and stuff like that. And I try on these very skinny jeans, okay? And the problem was I couldn't get them off. They're not like today where you've got all these flash elasticated materials. They weren't coming off. My dad starts telling the sales assistant, the problem is I think his feet have got hot and they've started to swell. And we can't get these things. Honestly, it was absolutely shambolic. It took me, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes to get these jeans off. My parents are saying stupid things. I'm totally embarrassed. It was horrible. But that was, I thought I'm just going to have to walk out of this shop with these jeans on and never get them off again or cut them off when I get home. But my parents weren't having any of that. They were not going to pay for jeans that didn't fit. So I had to just stay there. And it was horrible. It was honestly, I wake up thinking about it now. It's an awful moment. I did do something worse, but it was so shameful, I can't tell you.
We all want to hear that now.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that.
Would you rather have no knees or no elbows?
No knees.
No knees. Next one. Alex.
What was your either your favourite band, rock band growing up as a teenager or to this day? Who is it?
There was a band when I was a teenager called Lloyd Cole and the Commotions. Very much like them. You can look them up and you can see what they're all about. The band that you'd have heard of probably that I liked a lot was R.E.M.
I had a question. Since you're into your video games and into watching sport, I was wondering whether you've been keeping up with the League of Legends World Championships and if you have a favourite for the tournament.
No, I haven't. What is this League of Legends?
I learned today, it's one of the biggest online multiplayer battle games. It's having its world tournament recently.
So is it a bit like a Warhammer clone?
Kind of, yeah.
But my what is the Warhammer thing called? World of Warcraft, right? Is it World of Warcraft? Oh yeah, I know what they are, but I mean the online thing that was the first really big online... Yeah. So is it a bit like that sort of thing?
I don't play it, okay, to be honest, right. But I was watching it this afternoon. Great stuff.
I don't know anything about that. I'm sorry.
I had an actual question, which was, what do you think about, you know, with the refugees coming into Syria, what do you think, from a Christian perspective, the churches should be kind of encouraging the government to do?
That is a brilliant question. And it's a really difficult situation. My reading of the situation is that you've got a huge crisis going on and that you need two things when you're seeking to help people. You need two things. You need compassion in your heart, but you also need wisdom, because the needs of humanity are far greater than we as individuals or even as a nation can meet. And sometimes you hear people very zealously talking as though, you know, if we were just inclined to do it, we can solve all these problems. Well, the truth is, humanity has been trying to solve these problems for thousands upon thousands of years, and we're not going to solve all the world's problems. Actually, Christianity teaches that this, because the fundamental problem is not that there's a bit of evil, but the evil runs through the heart of every human being. And even ourselves, we've got a bit of a job sorting ourselves out, let alone helping other people. Now, in God's strength, we can. So when we look upon this problem, and really the scope of it is such that whilst the churches must play their part, it's going to be beyond the ability of the churches, just the churches, to solve this problem. Because it's not just the hundreds of thousands of people who've actually made it to the borders of Europe. It's many, many times that number that are still in the Middle East, North Africa, and would like to come here and possibly are even now planning the way to get here. It seems to me, my reading of the situation, rightly or wrongly, is that this current huge migration, it was happening to some extent already, but the sort of numbers we're seeing now has been triggered by Germany publicly announcing that it would take anyone. And if I was living in that part of the world and I heard that Germany was opening its borders to me, if it was within my power to get here, I would. The problem, of course, with that is that it's just completely unmanageable. And Germany have reined back in from that now. And they're desperately now trying to get other European partners to help them. So I think there was possibly a lack of wisdom in that. I think just announcing, making an announcement like that without consultation to other people, I think might have been unwise. Nevertheless, we're in the situation we're in, and obviously we've got to try and be compassionate. But it's a very complicated political situation, because substantial numbers of people in European countries now are getting fed up with the number of people who are coming into our countries. Whether we agree with that or not, it is a reality that a lot of people feel like that. And governments have got to be very careful that they don't inflame public opinion to the point where the people in the countries won't tolerate it any longer. Equally, we've got to be very compassionate towards these folk. If I had the answers, I'd go into politics. I think it's a really difficult situation. But as churches, on a much more simple level, I would hope that we would send what help we can and just take mercy upon people, because it could be us.
What's your favourite dessert?
Cheesecake.
What's the best country you visited, or your favourite?
The best
country.
Italy. There's more culture and history than you can shake a stick at. I'm really interested in church history, so there's tons of early church history there. And that, well, not just early church history, you've got all the medieval Roman Catholicism, all that stuff. So that's really interesting. I love the food. I don't really like cheese, so that rules out the pizza side of it, but the pasta side of it, love pasta, and they just cook it really well whenever you're in Italy. And the weather's good, and it's got Venice and Rome and all these absolutely amazing, Florence, amazing places. I love Italy. Red wine, fantastic.
What's your favorite story within the Bible?
Just going to need a minute or two to think about it. There's a lot of stories in the Bible. I think the Easter story. I know it's not like a story, as in made up, but I just love it when you read those chapters of the Bible. I had this jigsaw puzzle when I was quite a small boy that my dad gave me, or my mum, I can't remember. And it was a picture of Jesus on Easter Sunday coming out of the tomb. And it just really stays in my mind. And I particularly like the story of the road to Emmaus, where there's the two disciples and Jesus turns up and they're all miserable. And he says to them, "What are you miserable about?" And they say, "What? Don't you know what's been going on in Jerusalem?" And it's Jesus himself they're talking to. I love all that. And I love the fact he breaks bread with them. They invite him into their home. He breaks bread with them. And then suddenly, when he's broken the bread, they realize who's with them. And they rush back to Jerusalem to tell the disciples that Jesus is risen. I love that.
I was going to say, while a lot of missionaries go abroad, do you think to an extent the UK requires missionaries in areas of high power, like banking was my area?
I think what happened with banking, you know, over recent years is a clear indication that we need Christians in these jobs, but Christians who are sufficiently strong that they don't get corrupted when they're in the job by the promise of money and all the rest of it, but are prepared to say, do you know what, I'm in this business, but if I have to stand out like a sore thumb and say this isn't right and even risk my job for the truth and for honour, you know, honour and integrity, then I will. So I think society as a whole could always do with people I like that. I think when Jesus said you're the salt of the earth, you're the light of the world, I think that's largely what he meant, that his followers are meant to be shining lights for Jesus in whatever sphere of life we're called to. It would be nice to think there were lots of Christian bankers who were standing up over recent years saying we shouldn't be loaning money like this. We shouldn't be fixing or acting corruptly. So, yeah, absolutely. I personally have always felt a very strong calling to the UK to stay here and to try and serve God here. I really honour people who feel they're called to other parts of the world, but it seems to me Britain's culture is fast declining, and we urgently need a re-injection of godliness in our society. And it's never been perfect in Britain. People who think it was perfect in years gone by are unaware of what was really going on. But I think we are seeing a culture in which there's very little in the way of common belief that people can cling to. And in the past, that's what Christianity provided, at least at a certain level. And it's going missing there.
What's the most amazing miracle you've seen or heard of?
Well, I'm over the years, I suppose, I've heard of all sorts of miracles. And I tend... I tend to be more interested in things that I've seen personally myself, even if they're less spectacular, because I think it means a great deal more when you've actually been a part of something. I think for myself, probably, it's not particularly spectacular, but when I was a kid, one of the bad habits I picked up as a teenager was smoking. And when I then, at the in my early 20s, really got more serious about Christianity, I obviously wanted to give up smoking, but I found it really hard to do. I'm not a person of great willpower. That is how, unfortunately, things have descended to the sorry state they have with regard to my physique. And and I'm not a person of great willpower. And I just couldn't give up smoking. I prayed about it. I prayed and prayed and prayed about it. Nothing seemed to work. I was just hopelessly addicted. And I'd always lied about it to my parents, which was completely ridiculous. I mean, they obviously knew I smoked. I stank of it when I came in the house. I mean, anyway. I remember one day, I was so fed up with it, and I just talked to my dad about it and just said, "Dad, I'm just totally sick to the back teeth of this. I really want to give it up. Can't do it." And Dad said to me, "I'll pray for you." And I said, "Well, I said, by all means do, but I've prayed and prayed about this. I have no confidence that this is going to work. I want to be honest with him. I just don't have any faith left that God's going to help me to stop doing this." And he said, "Well, I'll exercise my faith about it. I'll believe that God will answer this prayer." And he didn't even pray with me then. He just said, "I'll pray for you once you're gone." I think that's what happened from memory. And I remember as I was leaving the house, I thought, well, I at least, if he's going to pray for me, I at least owe him sort of some effort to try and give up. It didn't seem right to just go out and just start smoking straight away when I'd had that conversation. Now, I could normally go 24 hours without a cigarette before you know, caving in. So I did go 24 hours, nothing particularly sensational about that, and then that became 48 hours, and it became a bit longer. And then I remember it stretched to 2 weeks, which was a surprise to me. And it hadn't felt that difficult. There have been times when I've had to exercise a bit of self-control, but I managed it. Now, 2 weeks was my previous record. And I remember getting invited. It was while I was a student. And I got invited by this girl to go and do some homework at her place with her. And I didn't know whether she meant homework or homework. But anyway, it turned out she meant normal homework. And which was a shame, because it wasn't a shame. It was kind of a shame, and it wasn't a shame. She was a smoker, and she had a packet of cigarettes on the table. And I really remember this. I remember thinking, if she doesn't mean homework, I'm going to have a fight on my hands to stay pure here. Well, I didn't have to face that test, as it turned out. And the other thing I remember thinking was, if she offers me a cigarette, what am I going to do? As it turned out, neither of the two became available, and that was quite good. And as I walked out of her house, I remember having the distinct feeling that I would never smoke a cigarette again in my life. I don't know where that came from, but I had a very strong conviction about it. And I never did. And it wasn't that difficult. Now, I know that's not like, wow, you know, God raised someone from the dead or something. But to me, I'd experienced being utterly unable to do it. And then just having this feeling that it was over, I didn't have to fight this anymore. And I've never been seriously tempted to pick up a cigarette to this day.
What are your views on homosexuality? Do you think it's like people's choice, or do you think they're born that way?
Wow. I have never had any same-sex attraction in my life. I've never been attracted to someone of the same gender as me. I've always only been attracted to girls. So I don't have that struggle in my life. And I'm extremely sympathetic to people who do, particularly Christians who do. I believe that the Bible teaches that the only context in which people should have sex is when they're married, man and a woman. That's what I think the Bible teaches. But actually the truth is, most people, even Christians, struggle with that at some level or another, at some point in their lives. And for some people, the struggle is same-sex attraction. Now, some Christians have read the Bible differently and have started to say, actually, we think it's all right for people to have a relationship between two men or two women under certain circumstances. At the moment, what I would say is, I try to live my life by the Bible, and it doesn't, to me, that's not the way I read the Bible. So my belief is that actually having a homosexual, a gay relationship would not square with Christian commitment. Now, I know that that is seriously unpopular to say that today, and probably I'd get in trouble for saying it, I guess. But that's what I believe. Because I've found the Bible to be trustworthy in my life, and I trust its teaching, even when it teaches something that's unpopular. Having said all of that, Christians are very... there has been, over my lifetime, a big debate about whether people are born gay or whether life, if you know, they've become gay as a result of things that have happened to them. So the argument is nature versus nurture. Have you heard of it expressed in that way? Is it their nature, or is it to do with how they've been nurtured in life? Certainly, in terms of what is said now, it is generally accepted that people are born that way. However, there isn't, to my knowledge, a huge amount of research being done on it now, because it is so hugely sensitive issue that I very much doubt anybody would want to publish research that would suggest the contrary. In any case, to me, it's not a big deal. If we believe the Bible, then people are born with all kinds of tendencies towards doing all sorts of things that God wouldn't have them do, and God nevertheless calls them to a life of holiness and obedience. So for me, never had any same-sex attraction, but I've had plenty of attraction to women who, you know, I probably shouldn't have been attracted to, and made all kinds of mess-ups in this area, and I bet most people, a good number of people have. So I'm not in a position to judge anyone, and ultimately whether you're born with the tendencies to wrongdoing that you've got, or whether they are part of what's happened to you as you've grown up, doesn't really bother me. You've got them, and you need to seek God for the strength to live righteously. But broadly, my perspective on it is that God would call people who have same-sex attraction not to act upon it. But I do realise that that is extremely controversial. It would be based upon my reading of the Bible, and I've grown to trust the Bible, and I seek to be obedient to it. I would hope to be extremely kind and sensitive and understanding to people who struggle with that teaching. Nevertheless, that's what I think.
Who's got the mic?
Alex has got the mic.
Yes, quickly then.
What's your favourite parable in the Bible?
Prodigal son.
Any others?
I was reading a book by that Nick Lunn recommended about looking at the Old Testament kind of from an archaeological point of view, and so kind of trying to compare the Old Testament to see whether it fits in, if it's a sensible assumption that its timeline is accurate. And I was kind of thinking that obviously the more you go on, the more archaeological research you can do and the comparison you can do to the past. Does that kind of set up us as the current generation compared to previous generations, and also therefore generations to come, have certain advantage in the playing field of faith if you've got more evidence for it? You kind of see what I mean? Do you think the passage of time adds an unfair skew to somebody's chances of believing the Bible?
I think most people who come to faith and most people who reject faith probably don't do it strictly on the basis of evidence, is the truth of the matter. There are some people who are very intellectually led. I might be a bit of a person like this myself, a bit. But actually, even I didn't, in the end, commit myself to Christianity simply by virtue of a kind of intellectual assessment of it. I needed to know it was credible. I needed to know I wasn't committing intellectual suicide by becoming a Christian. But actually, I, like so many others, became a Christian at a point of life crisis because my old way of looking at life began to break down and couldn't cope with what I was going through. Having said all of that, I think it's true to say that each generation asks different questions. And Christians then spend time trying to respond to the questions that their generation is bringing. So when I was at your age, the question was, how can it possibly be true that, you know, Jesus did all these miracles and stuff? It's like believing in goblins and elves. You know, this is, advanced people don't believe this kind of thing. And so we spent a lot of our time building defenses to intellectually justify our belief in the supernatural and so on. Nowadays, I think that's less of an issue. There are still some people who think like that. But by far the more difficult thing for us in nowadays is that people will think, how can you believe, it's very arrogant of you to believe that what's true for you is also true for me. That's you trying to inflict your views upon me. I think that's a much more common problem. So now, defending Christianity tends to focus on these questions of, can Christianity be true in an environment where there are many other beliefs, or do we just have to say everything's true for the people who believe it? So the passing of time in that sense doesn't really change things because the questions that people are asking change. Having said that, if you're asking me, do I think our understanding of the Bible and archaeology and the rest of it is more accurate now than, say, it was a few hundred years ago, yes.
It's not a particularly deep question. What's your favourite sandwich filling?
Now you're asking a question that I'm really enjoying working through the options. You can't often get it, but I do like tuna and celery. Crayfish and rocket. I like that.
What's wrong with you, man?
What would you choose?
I don't really eat sandwiches.
No.
Anything with, like, chorizo in it and parma ham.
I like all of that stuff as well. Oh, I like sandwiches. I don't like cheese.
Well, we're nearly done.
Oh, okay. Have you got a question?
One last question. It's a stupid question, but what are the strengths and weaknesses of Wesley's quadrilateral? It's not even Wesley's, is it? What are the strengths and weaknesses of Wesley's quadrilateral?
What is the Wesley's thing is, quadrilateral?
I thought you'd know the answer to
I
that.
I don't know what that is.
It's a discipleship course that John Wesley set up.
Anyway, it's probably quite good. I like John Wesley.
Yeah. Listen, I think we need to call it time there. We are going to have just, because Daniela, we've got 5 minutes. I know that Daniela has two more songs. Wow. So shall we let the band lead us in a couple of worship? So if they just want to get ready, and just while they're getting ready, would anyone like to come and just say a quick prayer for James here? Yeah? Come on then, Tim. Anyone else? All right, just Tim. Great, don't it? Do it into the mic. You can lay a hand on his shoulder. That'd be great.
Okay, dear God, thank you for James Collins, and thank you that he chose to come this evening to speak to us, and thank you for his experiences which he's been able to share with us, and thank you that he's come to this church, and I pray you'll be a great blessing to him, and that he'll be a great blessing to the church, I meant to say, yeah, and that you just give him wisdom and all his leadership to come, yeah, and I just thank you for what he's given us, and I pray we'll be able to ponder on it as we go home this evening. Amen.
Amen. James, thank you so much. I'm really excited about James being at our church. And, you know, the last few months have been great fun working with James. I'm looking forward to what lies ahead. So let's show him our appreciation. Let's stand. And Daniela, why don't you lead us in just a couple of songs?
Can I just say something very quickly? And that is this. I know when I was your age, I had tons of questions and I was making a few mess ups along the way. And maybe you will too. I mean, I'm sure Mark would say this, and he's your first port of call, but if you ever want to speak to me about anything, I hope you'll find me approachable And you can always, you know, if you've got questions about whether Christianity is true or whatever, can't always answer them straight away. If I'm busy in church, I might need to be doing whatever my jobs are. But I'm really open to speaking with any of you and trying to encourage you. I'm absolutely convinced that the best course your lives can take is to follow Jesus. I don't want to ram that down your throat, but I'm telling you from my experience, it is a better way of life than you're going to carve out for yourself without him. And I encourage you and would want to talk to you about it and explain myself in making such an outrageous statement.